Hello and welcome to the FT Advisor podcast. Today we'll be covering all things fixed income with Amanda Stitt from T. Rowe Price. She's been a portfolio specialist in the fixed income division and joined the firm in 2021. Fixed income was back in the spotlight in 2023 with rising yields. Morningstar data at the end of 2023 showed more than £18 billion was invested in government bonds in the year. Thanks for joining me, Amanda. We've heard a lot about how 2023 was a big year for fixed income. What do you think changed in 2023?
I think a lot of things did actually change. I think we actually have to bring back the question of why do people have fixed income in the first place? And I bring that back to three things. One, they like fixed income because it tends to be negatively correlated to risk assets such as equities. Two, it tends to be a less volatile asset class than other asset classes like equities or even property in some cases. And three, it has a yield. It has an income and hopefully a total return. The thing that really changed over the course of 2023 is that latter one. We actually, after this excessively quick and high-powered interest rate hiking environment that we experienced across the globe, finally we reached a yield that is in fact attractive for investors. And that's across most developed markets. Some are exceptions. Japan, for example, is still very low yielding. But that's something that's been absent from fixed income for a long time. So having a yield is attractive in its own right, but it also makes other asset classes a little less attractive because it increases the benchmark of what they have to return over fixed income for them to be attractive. So that was the big change. I think the other thing that was really different was not necessarily a hope, but a more well-founded hope that this bear market that we've experienced over the course of the last 2 years is finally turning around. That's hinged on inflation expectations. Inflation, I think the market now is, the consensus is we have in fact beaten inflation perhaps now. And interest rates now, we can think of where we're sitting at this point in time as that terminal level, the highest level that we'll reach in that cycle. So that's attractive not only from an income perspective, but perhaps now total return is something that's going to return to fixed income and something that's really been absent from government bonds for quite some time.
Yeah, and obviously it's become more popular with the yields, but fixed income was always there, bonds were always there. I mean, did it ever really go away or was it always popular in the background?
Well, did it ever go away? I think it changed. Certainly when we were in that low interest rate environment that we were post, global financial crisis, the ability to get income from your developed market government bonds just wasn't there when we were on that zero interest rate policy income. That desire to have income was not going to be met for any investment in government bonds. And for that reason, there were a lot of investors that were what we call hunting for yield or searching for yield and essentially moving out into other asset classes within fixed income, which are a little higher risk, but that gave you that extra yield. Now, you could debate whether that was the right decision for a lot of investors, because obviously with that higher yield, you had higher volatility and higher risk, and some investors were probably not used to that. So it did tend to push some investors into maybe some uncomfortable components of fixed income. But I think, generally speaking, the desire for fixed income, those three characteristics that I mentioned before, the diversification against equities, the low volatility, and the income or total return, had always been here. And over the course of the last couple of years, the desire for all three of those was very high. The problem was you just weren't getting it from traditional type of fixed income. So I wouldn't say that we saw less flows into government bonds, but we saw increased flows into more alternative type of fixed income investments, which still met those types of criteria. And of course, private debt became very popular, particularly in the institutional market. Now that has its advantages. Yes, it was a more stable yield and higher yield than sort of the public markets, but it had less liquidity. So it had its pros and cons. So I wouldn't say that the desire for fixed income ever went away. The characteristics of fixed income were always desired, but the way you got them was very different. Now, again, for the first time in a while, a lot of investors are now thinking, maybe I can get what I want from fixed income from that traditional type, government bond investing.
Yeah, that's super interesting. And kind of coming back to 2023, was there anything in particular that kind of surprised you about the markets last year?
I think what surprised me in 2023 was how volatile the market was and how quickly it changed its mind insofar as the expectations of central banks. So if you remember, in November and December, we had a really strong rally in things like the global ag index or government bonds generally, one of the strongest that we've had for multiple decades. And that was off the premise that it's over. CPI or inflation was looking like it was coming down. We had not necessarily a surprise, but the CPI was a bit less than what the market had forecast in the last quarter. And the Fed, for example, sort of embraced that dovish tone or that dovish tone. And the market quickly priced in a lot of cuts coming through in 2024 and extending into 25. And that wasn't just in the US, that was in the UK. So we went from an environment where we were still in 2023, still thinking that inflation, maybe we have to fight harder against it, maybe we'll have hikes further than what we originally expected, to, wow, we're going into this cutting environment very, very quickly and the war is over.
Yeah.
So it was the volatility. And I don't think that's necessarily over. So 2023, it was really about the front end of the yield curves experiencing the most volatility as we reprice what we thought central banks would do. Maybe in 2024, that volatility won't be at the short end of the curve. Maybe it'll be in the longer dated bonds, because I think with this inverted curve that we're experiencing still at the moment, that renormalization to a normal yield curve where, you know, a 10-year bond should yield more than a 2-year bond, That should return. And the question is, how is it going to return? Is it going to return in a steady environment, or are we going to see volatility as we return to normal? And I would suggest the latter.
And that kind of volatility you talk about, do you see that extending kind of beyond this year into the next 5 or even 10 years?
Yeah, you never forecast that far in the future. Yeah. You're always wrong. But I certainly think you can expect it over the course of the short to midterm. I think we got used to post-financial crisis an environment, particularly in fixed income, of low volatility. And that was artificial low volatility, because central banks were essentially, you know, we had zero interest rates and central banks were always there with their QE programs and buyer of last resorts. So volatility was artificially kept low. This past cycle that we've had, when we started the hiking cycle, that volatility quickly changed as we moved from QE to QT, and interest rates obviously going up aggressively. If clients or investors are expecting, now that we've got that interest rate hiking environment hopefully behind us, if clients are expecting to go back to what we had, you know, back in post-GFC, I think they're going to be sorely mistaken, because that volatility wasn't real. It was artificially kept low. So the next 5 years, if I can forecast anything, is the next 5 years of volatility is going to be higher than what we saw pre-COVID, post-GFC. It will change, though. It's not going to be more at the front end as it was over the course of the last 2 years. In my mind, it's more like going to be at the back end of the curve, particularly because we have so much debt now from governments. And that's a lot of debt to digest by the markets. They're doing a good job of it now, but who's to say that that debt supply dynamic changes over the course of 2024? And that could create some volatility over not only the short term, but the longer term as well.
And do you feel that central banks are on top of inflation?
It's still a question that's out there. Certainly, the market seems to think they are, and that's why we're pricing in across multiple developed market curves a cutting environment over the course in 2024. And the only way that's allowed is if inflation is under control and we get back to target. But what I find fascinating is last year, in 2023, there was a real focus on particularly the Fed about the last thing that they want to do is be known as like that Arthur Burns type of Fed chair. This is Jerome Powell specifically. Arthur Burns was obviously famous for cutting rates too quickly in the 70s, and inflation wasn't under control and reaccelerated. And when Paul Volcker came in, he had to be very aggressive in the hiking cycle. So the market's view, and certainly our view, was Jerome Powell didn't want to be known as the Arthur Burns. He'd much prefer to be the Volcker, who was ended up being, you know, Saint Paul Volcker, because he got inflation under control. And we felt that for that reason, he'd probably be late to cutting rates. So really make sure that inflation was well under control and then start cutting rates. At the end of last year, that tone changed because the Fed clearly changed their tone as well. And they much more embraced the fact that they could actually cut rates more quickly and more aggressively in 2024 than we originally thought, because that inflation story in their minds is pretty much done. They've had that success. What is concerning them increasingly rather than inflation is that growth dynamic. So they're moving away from concerns about being that Arthur Burns to making sure that we have this soft landing in the US rather than anything more dramatic. And that's why we've seen this dovish shift. From the Bank of England's perspective, Bank of England, in my opinion, lost a bit of credibility over this cycle. Inflation obviously ran a lot hotter in the UK versus the US, and there's a lot of skepticism as to how the Bank of England communicated their decisions and whether they were late in some of their policy decisions. So I think it's much more of a credibility issue for the Bank of England. They have to prove that they get this inflation story under control. Now, currently in the UK, gilts, if you look across the curve, in the market at the moment, the market's pricing in that we will experience 5 cuts in 2024, starting probably second quarter. So we're pricing in, the market's pricing in, we're going from this base rate of 5.25, which we have at the moment, right down to 4 by the end of 2024. I think that's pretty optimistic that the inflation story is done. Inflation's still high in the UK. There's less energy efficiency. The labour market tends to move a little slower than it does in the US. So I do think the market's probably been a bit too optimistic there, and we'll have to see maybe a little of those cuts priced out.
Yeah. And as kind of advisors and managers look to kind of sort their clients' affairs now, do you think government bonds are still popular or are still attractive?
They've returned to popularity, and I think that's a different thing. So yes, they fell out of grace for multiple reasons for many years, and more recently it's because of that volatility and obviously that massive capital loss that we saw in government bonds, particularly over 2022, but extending into 2023. They do hit the mark a lot more now with that income, with that potential total return, which are, you know, two of those qualities that we do like in bonds. Where it's still questionable is the diversification benefit of bonds versus equities and that total volatility. So from a diversification benefit, obviously we want, when we build portfolios, fixed income or government bonds to move in the opposite direction of equities. That's all about efficient portfolio construction. That's largely been absent for 2 years for government bonds. And bonds have sold off at the same time as equities. So they're not giving any diversification benefit to investors. The reason why that positive correlation, if you analyze it, is really at the heart of it is inflation again. When we historically have had inflation, particularly inflation expectations above a certain level, those correlations between equities and bonds flip to positive, like we've seen more recently. So the question is it going to return to a negative correlation, which we really do like? And again, it depends on inflation. If we've got inflation under control, much more likely. But I think, again, if you think of the period that we've had post-Great Financial Crisis, it was almost a permanent negative correlation between bonds and equities. And again, that was a period where inflation was zero. So there was no concern about inflation. In fact, we were trying to get inflation into the system as opposed to taking it out. So again, this assumption that correlation relationship between bonds and equities is going to go back to what it was post-GFC is probably wrong. You really need to look further back in history when inflation was more volatile, interest rates were a bit more volatile, and that diversification moved around a bit. I have no doubt that if we do have a meaningful risk-off event, a black swan event, something that we weren't expecting that really surprised the market to the downside, bonds will give you that diversification. And better yet, we're starting with a higher yield, which is great for fixed income. So we're closer to diversification working. I think 2024 is a year where we will start to see that negative correlation between bonds and equities play through. But as I said, don't expect it to be a stable negative correlation going forward in your portfolio construction, because it will be more volatile. Hands down, though, government bonds are much more attractive than they were 2 years ago.
Yeah. What does that mean for the kind of standard 60-40 portfolio? Is that still a way that kind of investors can get the best?
Yeah, well, the 60-40 is really based on that principle of diversification. So there's three characteristics of bonds: diversification, lower volatility than equities, and then, of course, total return. So for 60-40 to work the most efficiently it can, you have to have all those three characteristics of bonds working. So as I said, if diversification to equities is back, great, 60-40 is going to work again. If volatility comes back, and keep in mind, we've come from a period of the last 2 years, the volatility in fixed income markets relative to their history is one of the highest periods that we've seen, the most volatile periods that we've seen. Equities, relative to their normal longer-term volatility, yes, it's been higher, but not much. So bonds have been really this outlier of higher volatility. And as I said earlier, what do we think that volatility is going to be going forward? It's going to be less at the front end, like cash rates and low-duration bonds. That volatility is going to die down as we move into the next interest rate cycle. But maybe the back end of bonds, or the longer maturity bonds, are going to experience that volatility that I mentioned, generated by excessive debt and the normalization of the yield curve. So I'm giving you a very wafty answer here, but to sum that up, 60-40 will work better because of the diversification. It will work better because you're getting better total returns and yield. But we also have to be mindful that that volatility number is going to be, again, different to what if you expect it to be really low, you probably have the wrong assumption.
Okay, interesting. And looking forward to 2024 a bit, do you think that there will be a kind of surge in impact investing, or is that something people will be looking into more?
Absolutely, absolutely. I think this area of the market is very much a growing part of the market. Certainly if you look at industry flows, a lot more investors are becoming much more aware in their investing in things like impact. They want to make a difference in the world in the way that they invest. And certainly our experience, that is a growth area. The market is also growing in that area as well, and it's expanding the opportunity set. In the past, it was quite narrow. When you're an investor, you had far less bonds to choose from if you wanted to invest in an impact type of way. That's broadening out really nicely. So I think that's definitely an area of growth. And I think it's a great area of growth. And it's something that we're really excited to be part of.
Yeah. And is that something that T. Rowe Price is working on a bit?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We do have direct impact investing strategies within fixed income, and we also have them within equities. So we do have both sides of the investment spectrum actually covered by impact. And that's certainly a growing part of our client base is interested in that area.
Yeah. And as kind of a final question to round up, as you work in kind of fixed income, it's obviously been must have been an exciting time. What is it that you're kind of most looking forward to in the space coming forward?
What I had been most looking forward to was definitely income. Because I, whenever you talk to equity investors, they're like, oh, you know, why would I invest in fixed income? You have no income. And now we get to say to the equity guys, you know, we're in high yield, for example, we've got an 8% yield. How are you going to beat that in equities? It's a lot harder. It's a lot harder. So it's great to see that balance sort of back into the market. But I'm really looking forward to that diversification coming back in a meaningful way. And I certainly think that that's going to be here with us in the short term.
That's fantastic. Is there anything else that you wanted to add, do you think?
No, I think we've covered it all. So it's a great time. We've learned a lot over the course of the last couple of years. When I say we, I mean the markets. We've gone through an historic period within fixed income, and we're all very very hopeful that the next 5 years is going to be a much easier investment environment, and certainly one that's fruitful for our clients. And we're very active managers at T. Rowe Price, so we're always looking for the best opportunities out there.
Yeah. Well, that's been a very interesting chat with Amanda Stitt, and it's certainly given me a lot to think about. Thank you for listening to another episode of the FT Advisor podcast. We'll see you next time. Thanks.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.